Just how challenging are the housing problems facing Utah? And can local governments open up their playbooks to accommodate more home ownership and rental opportunities throughout the state? You'll hear a conversation about those topics and other findings from recent reporting by the Utah Foundation as I sit down with Vice President and Director of Research, Sean Tigan, in this edition of Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichard. Sean, we recently released the first two installments in a study called Is the Middle Missing? A Guide to Expanding Options for Utah Home Buyers and Renters. For our listeners, what is the missing middle?
So Peter, basically the missing middle refers to that ground that is between single family homes on large lots and those large apartment complexes. So it's those homes that we're living in between those, and they can encompass a variety of like multi-unit housing buildings. But the key is that they're house scale, so they fit in a scale with the surrounding community. They also are meant to facilitate neighborhood walkability. And one of the big ideas here is that we're trying to accommodate changing demographics and preferences and reach out to people with a variety of incomes.
And it seems like there's kind of a flexibility in what would be considered missing middle in one area versus another. So maybe in a traditional larger lot, single family neighborhood, bringing in the middle would be to bring in, say, like a set of smaller houses on smaller lots or townhouses. Or doubles, for that matter. If you were in a more urbanized area, the middle would be it would be something with more units. Is that accurate? It's contextual, I guess, is the point.
Yeah, to a certain extent. You know, you could, even though you were bringing up these possibilities for a single family kind of large lot area, one of the things we're finding is that you could have like a mansion apartment. So you'd have a building that looks like a single family house. But then when you get inside there, you'll notice, hey, you know, there's actually 6 units in here or something. So, and that's probably not going to be quite as common. What you might more typically see are, you know, maybe 3 townhomes connected together or possibly a couple of units on smaller lots. When you talk about those units on small lots, you can kind of think of the possibility in some areas of a cottage court where you've got maybe 6 or 8 small homes that maybe share some green space and really don't take up nearly as much land as a single family unit would that has its own front and back full yards and a big garage.
And in our second installment in the series, we have a lot of visuals. It was interesting to see that some of these very much just look like houses. It's almost like it's unnoticeable that you have any kind of a multifamily element there at all.
You know, when I started working on this report, something that kind of struck me is that I started looking around for multifamily housing units. And if I step out into my front yard and look down the street at where my street kind of tees onto another road, there's a threeplex down there. I had no idea it was a threeplex. I've lived in this house for almost a decade, and I had no clue. I mean, it's interesting that they can fit in with the neighborhood in a nice way. There's a street in Daybreak that we just did a little tour on earlier in the year. You drive down the street, it looks like you've got these beautiful single-family homes. They're actually threeplexes, all like a big, long stretch of them, and it's almost not noticeable. Only noticeable, really, if you're looking for it.
Right. And of course, when we travel around, whether within the United States or we go to great cities or smaller towns, for that matter, of Europe or Japan or places like that, these are places that are very charming and appealing to people. Otherwise, they wouldn't be tourist destinations. Yet, they're filled with a variety of housing types and sizes. And we don't really, as visitors, we don't really pay attention to that. We're just kind of visiting the totality of it.
Yeah, I think one of the things, one of the key points to this whole concept of middle housing is that you've got smaller yards, you've got smaller buildings, and so you create a little bit more walkability in these neighborhoods. Walkability is key, and that does for many of these places that you mentioned. Really, that is the reason why they're cool. That's why the reason why people want to go there, because you can stay in a place and walk down the street. Maybe there's a cafe, or you walk down the other way, and maybe there's a coffee shop and a restaurant down the road. And there are a variety of kind of amenities that really make a place. Whereas you have a neighborhood with a bunch of half acre lots, I mean, you could see some beautiful, wonderful homes on these big half acre lots, but you don't really see a lot of people walking down the street.
Right. So the scale kind of allows for this communal dynamism to occur.
Yeah. And with this middle housing, scale is really important. If you've got, like I was mentioning, these, a single family home on a half acre lot, you don't want to go to suddenly have, a five-story building, maybe with 20 units in it. That might not really fit with the community character. But maybe it's a little bit more acceptable, like you said, to have maybe some smaller lots mixed in, or maybe some townhomes, or maybe even like I mentioned previously, a mansion apartment. But if you're looking in neighborhoods that have a little bit more of that variety in housing, and where you might actually even see some small apartments, then putting in, you see a 12-plex or something that is a little bit, quite a few more units, or maybe even a little bit taller. Maybe it's a three-story building that can still be considered middle housing because it fits in with that surrounding community and kind of hopefully maintains the character of the community to a certain extent.
Let's go to the key findings, Sean.
Yeah.
In the first installment, we look at the scope of the challenge, the housing challenge facing Utah right now. What did we find in terms of the sentiments of Utahns through survey work? And what is the data saying? How much does that correspond with reality?
More than 80% of Utahns feel that home prices and rents are too high. There's probably a pretty good reason for that. Housing prices have been skyrocketing. In fact, astoundingly, year over year, you've seen the housing appreciation of almost 30% from September 2020 to September 2021. It's this enormous increase. And when you look over, adjust for inflation over roughly the past decade, looking at a mortgage payment with 10% down on the median price housing in Utah, you see this increase of $469. I mean, that's basically you're going from a little over $1,000 to over $1,500 a month in payments. And that's on the median priced home. And that's inflation adjusted. And it's a big deal, particularly for people who are buying their first home. So the whole idea behind this middle housing is to allow for some additional price points. One of the things that you've seen in that huge appreciation of housing over the past decade is a kind of a disappearance of many of the options that people had for lower priced homes. There was a point in, like, it's, if you lived in Salt Lake County and you wanted to find a home in Rose Park, you might be able to find a home there, might have been able to find a home there 15 years ago for under $100,000. Now the median price home is $350,000. And if there's something that's $100,000 there, it's probably going to be torn down. I don't even think you can find a plot of land there actually for $100,000. So,
right.
Things have been going crazy, and one of the ways to address this, possibly, hopefully, is by creating something a little bit different. And when you look, for instance, at townhomes, townhomes are cheaper than single-family homes. We might need to kind of reconsider what we're interested in living in if we want to continue to have homes for our kids to live in here when they maybe grow up and are looking for their first home ownership possibility.
Right. And certainly part of the strength of Utah has been its social mobility and its strong middle class. And of course, getting into that home ownership game, getting that first rung of the ladder is apparently becoming increasingly challenging.
It's increasingly challenging, but at the same time, it is so important. I mean, most of Americans' wealth is in the equity that they have in their homes.
And you can't just say, okay, well, forget it, I'll rent something and feel okay, because the rents have been going up, right?
In Davis and Utah County, rents have increased more than 50% from January of 2019 to July of 2021. And there's some indication maybe that these rent increases are slowing a little bit. But for people who are going to up their lease, maybe that I've been renting for a few years, my lease is up, I'm going to be renting maybe for a few more years, they're going to find some sticker shock, because in one way, because owners can charge more because housing has become so expensive over the last few years. It's really been going up, and that puts a pressure on first-time home buyers, but it also certainly is going to continue to put a pressure on those renters who may or may not want to become first-time home buyers in the future.
Can we expect things to get better? What's the outlook? I mean, obviously, we have rapid population growth. That's expected to continue. And then we'll also have changes in what that population looks like over time. How does that all play out for us?
Utah, from 2010 till 2020, was the fastest growing state in the nation. We grew at over 18%. A lot of that population growth is internal. It's Utahns having babies, but we also have a pretty cool state and people want to come here from other places. And so that adds to that internal natural population growth. That makes me think, you know, that and a lot of people who are looking at this, that there's going to continue to be a pressure on home costs. The future, it's hard to say what it's going to hold. You know, we've got really low interest rates right now. If interest rates were to increase at maybe what they were 15 years ago, most of us wouldn't be able to afford buying a home, right? I mean, if you've got an interest rate that's half of what it used to be, that $1,500 for a median price mortgage on your monthly mortgage payment, would be $3,000 plus. And that would price additional people out of the market. I guess it's hard to say what's going to be in the future, but Utah is going to keep growing. And there's likely to be an ever-increasing pressure on housing costs.
Something that really struck me here in the report was looking at the vacancy rate nationally being at, correct me if this is wrong, an all-time low. And then if you look across the 50 states, in this context, at a national all-time low, the state with the lowest vacancy rate is Utah.
And then even when you drill down more, look at Salt Lake County, and Salt Lake County is driving down that all-time low national state low vacancy rate. So I mean, if you're looking for a house, basically that vacancy rate is really an issue when you're thinking about people, like, for instance, buying a new home. Like if you're looking out, anecdotally, we've heard people say, you know, I put an offer on 20 houses and they got bought out from under me because, you know, people are putting bids on way over the selling price. That's a real problem if you're out there, you know, searching for a new home. But those aren't just anecdotal. That's not just an anecdotal thing. If you look at days on the market, I mean, if you're selling a house and your days on the market is only, you know, 6 or 7 days, that doesn't give people a lot of time to really find the house that is exactly right for them. And ultimately, you end up with people putting more money than even the list is. And that's helping kind of drive up this overall housing cost.
Well, I guess it's a good thing if you're in the position of enjoying the equity, because you're already in the game. But if you're coming in cold and trying to find a place, it's tough rowing right now. So why not just go ahead and slap down as much multifamily housing as we possibly can? I guess the first point is that wouldn't really address the home ownership issue, right? But what are the limitations that we face to just soaking up demand with a lot of large apartment complexes? Why is that not a perfect solution in and of itself?
the issue of ownership is certainly kind of that's part of the problem. I think another problem is that not everybody wants to live in those units. Some people want to live in a community that has a smaller neighborhood feel with maybe a mixture of single family units and small multiplexes. And I think that to give people that sort of option, I think is quite important. You could have a whole bunch of large apartments maybe in city centers, but if you don't necessarily want to find yourself living in the center of a city and renting for the rest of your life, that might not be the right option. The idea behind middle housing and this whole concept of missing middle housing is to allow for maybe some additional development of these duplexes and fourplexes and cottage courts that I mentioned earlier and mansion apartments and allow the market to see how many of us want to be living in those units. Right now, if there's restrictions on them being built or incentives for either, you know, luxury single family units or giant apartment complexes, we're not really giving people the opportunity to live in some of these other types of living arrangements.
So what it sounds like is it's kind of like a quality of life preference issue, where for a lot of people, this option brings quality of life along with it.
I think that's a very important point. And it also, in terms of, you know, this is related to quality of life, but we're going to see changing demographics in this state where we are getting older and we're expected to have smaller households, so fewer people living in a household. Either those older, maybe empty nester Utahns can continue to live in 3,500 square foot houses and on quarter acre lots or whatever in various places, or maybe they'll want to downsize a little bit, but they don't want to downsize necessarily into a small apartment somewhere, but maybe they want to downsize into something that still has some shared green space and a yard and maybe is one of these, you know, sixplex that's in a neighborhood that they've been living in all their lives, you know, somewhere out in South Ogden or Lehigh or Draper, for instance.
And we'll get into some of those preferences in later installments of the series. But for now, Let's turn to the second report in the series. We look at some of the forms that middle housing can take. We've talked about this. It could be a duplex. It could be a 6-unit townhome development or a 12-unit apartment complex. The number of units alone is an oversimplification, but it just depends on the neighborhood context and the characteristics. But we also, in this second report, we show a lot of images, as I mentioned earlier, of what some of these developments look like, and they're in different styles. So depending on your aesthetic, you would find different things that you might prefer. You know, for the most part, you look at these things and people would not find them offensive. And that's sort of the point, isn't it? That the idea is to provide housing that brings more units into a neighborhood, but without, from the perspective of neighbors, diminishing the quality of the neighborhood. Looking at the numbers,
yeah.
So we drilled in our four biggest counties, Davis, Salt Lake, Utah, and Weber counties. In these four large contiguous counties, what does it look like? How much middle housing do we have?
What we are seeing recently are a lot of townhomes. In the past century, you know, we saw a lot more duplexes and fourplexes and whatnot. Now, over the past 20 years, most of the middle housing that's being developed are townhomes.
Across these four large counties, it's 14% are middle housing. That's an estimate, give or take, right? It's our best estimate. But certainly, you wouldn't say that number is overwhelming. It's not like it's one half or even one third of the total. You've got larger proportion of a larger multifamily and a much larger proportion of single family. And so in some sense, it suggests that there may be more room to expand middle housing, depending on the community, obviously. And it also suggests to some extent that it is a marginal housing type, that it is indeed somewhat missing. And depending on the community, it could be very much missing.
In these four counties, a vast majority of us, more than two-thirds of us, live in single-family detached homes. So we're living in a home that is certainly not middle housing. And then we also see, particularly in Davis and Salt Lake County, that the large kind of scale apartments are overshadowing the development of middle housing. When looking at the percentage on its own, it may not tell us that really that the number is too low, but I think that if you look at it in kind of context, particularly with high costs, the high cost of housing that we're experiencing now, and things such as changing preferences and shifting demographics, then it really kind of sticks out that says, you know what, maybe this middle housing total is too low, and we ought to allow for the development of it and basically allow for the market to tell us how much housing should be there, as opposed to, I guess, the zoning codes, which we're really going to be talking about mostly in part four of this study.
Yeah, but it is remarkable to see, you know, just looking at Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City and South Salt Lake, you have 20% or more of the units could be middle housing. And then you go to Taylorsville and, you know, you're down in the 5% range, West Jordan a little bit more. So there really is, within our counties, there is some pretty significant variation. But it's also interesting to see that it's not just whether a city is old. You might think, oh, well, it must be that Ogden and Salt Lake have the highest proportions of middle housing, and they do have high proportions. But then we also see, looking at Utah County, Vineyard has actually the highest proportion, and most people think of that as being a very much of a new community.
Yeah, and like you can say that maybe the same for Harrisville in Weber County, and in terms of like the growing parts of Salt Lake County, you look at Bluffdale, Harriman, and South Jordan. You've got a large percentage of middle housing in those areas, and even Draper. When you look at those are almost exclusively townhomes. So you see that, you see a lot of townhome development happening in those communities. I think it is interesting that, like, not only the placement of housing across these communities, but also the type of development across these communities. And I think one of the interesting things that has come out of the studies that I think may be surprising to a lot of people is that you saw in the 80s and 90s, Salt Lake County had the least development by proportion of middle housing of any of these four counties. You saw like a lot more in Utah County. Though during that time, we also saw a lot of large apartments being developed.
So a lot of interesting findings in these first two installments, and I'm sure a lot more to come in the next two. Thanks for the conversation, Sean.
Hey, thanks so much, Peter.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.